The Copywriter Club podcast is sponsored by AirStory, the writing platform for professional writers who want to get more done in half the time. Learn more at airstory.co/club.
What if you could hang out with seriously talented copywriters and other experts, ask them about their successes and failures, their work processes, and their habits, then steal an idea or two to inspire your own work? That's what Rob and I do every week at the Copywriter Club podcast.
You're invited to join the club for episode 38 as we chat with copywriter Jessica Manuzic about her career journey from working in government to growing her own agency, landing and working with big name clients, finding confidence, and what she sees as the biggest opportunities for copywriters today.
Hi, Jess. Hi, Rob. How's it going?
Hey, guys.
Oh, hi. I'm good. Thanks.
Welcome to the show, Jess. We've been waiting. We've been waiting for you.
Oh, man. I'm so ready.
So I think a good place to start, Jess, is just how you ended up in copywriting, especially from government finance.
Yeah, it's funny because it was a completely natural and completely unnatural transition. Right out of college, I went into telemarketing, selling like skeezy online degrees to people who didn't need them. I was talking to like 74-year-old women, being like, no, but engineering would really help you with your goals. Like, it was not good news.
I can think of a couple of degrees I might want to get, actually.
Are you still selling?
Yeah. I'll look you up. Underwater basket weaving. But that was actually the first time I ever realized how powerful personality can be when you're selling something. Because everyone else was like, oh, hello, Jane. Would you like to purchase this degree program? And I was leaving them voicemails. It was like, Jane, this is Jane from the future, and I'm so glad you got that degree. Just like,
did you really leave those messages? Wow.
100%. And I actually was the top performing salesperson on my floor while I worked there because of those like just off the wall absurd scripts. So I left that, went to work for a school district where I was managing a multi-million dollar bond project. Spent a lot of time with rich white dudes for a while. And that was a learning experience. My boss at the time made a comment on one of my emails that I had sent to another staff member saying that I had too much personality. He was like, it's very funny. It's very funny. You're very funny. But, you know, this is just, it's not professional. I knew then that something had to change. So I had been following Ash Amberjay for a while with the Middle Finger Project and House of Moxie. And I knew that she was my people. So over the course of a month, I actually taught myself how to build websites. Basic ones, not great ones. So I built a one pager about why she should hire me and tweeted her the link. She was not hiring at the time. She emailed me back later that night and was like, oh my God, I'm crying. Like, yes, let's do this. And the rest is history. I put in my notice at my job, worked for Ash for a few years, and then transitioned into my own agency after she had, you know, mentored me and showed me the ropes.
Jess, that's really cool. You mentioned a couple of times personality, and I think if anybody starts looking at your website or any of the things that you've written in the past, personality is one of those things that really jumps out from what you do. Talk a little bit more about how you use your personality in the things that you're doing with your customers, but also the work that you've got on your website and that you've done for other people. It also just sort of, it's really good at bringing out the personality of your clients. How do you do that?
Well, I sold my voice to a sea witch in 1996.
Wait a minute. I think I've seen that.
They made a Lifetime documentary about it. It's called The Little Mermaid. That's a great question. I have always been super into pastiches where you mimic someone else's tone. And I remember, like, for fun, in middle school, I was like the chubby, nerdy middle school kid with like gel holding her bangs back, right? During that time, I was such a nerd that I would read books, then try to write in the author's voice. in my journal. And it got to the point where I was running writing contests for pastiches. And it's always been something that a skill I've developed because I've enjoyed the process of it. I love thinking like someone else and feeling like someone else. I think it's good not just for like compassion and empathy, but obviously for like writing and sales too. I don't know if that answers your question. I mean, I do it because I've worked really hard to be able to do it, I guess.
Yeah. Are there specific things that you do to sort of put yourself into that mindset, or is it just you're to the point now where it just comes naturally?
Both. With like my retainer clients who I work with all the time, that's a pretty automatic like switch that gets flipped. But for like new clients and stuff, I will actually make playlists in Spotify of like songs that have that same tone. Or this is going to sound so woo-woo and absolutely bonkeroo, but I go by my gut feeling a lot. So like I'll read over a client's intake stuff and like see how it makes my gut feel. And then I'll try to listen to music and find music that makes my gut feel that same way to like create an ambiance of their tone. Like I seep myself in their tone. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I sort of want to go through your intake form to find out what music matches my personality.
I do too. I'll make you a mixtape, Rob.
There you go.
Well, I also, and I want to go over your process and the questions you're asking on the intake form and all of that. But I feel like first I want to back up a bit and find out, you know, while you were immersed in copywriting and your first, you know, agency experience with Ash, you know, what were some key lessons you took from those writing projects and experiences that you've really incorporated into your own agency now?
Oh, so many things. If I had to pick one or two.
You can share 10. I mean, we've got time.
5,782 things.
We've got all day.
The best BuzzFeed article of all time. I would say from a business standpoint, Ash does an incredible job of projecting confidence and authority constantly. Even if, you know, things are showing up in her life or circumstances or whatever that, you know, kind of indicate a little bit of vulnerability or whatever, you know, Ash is just this unwavering pillar of strength for her community, which means people are just constantly, you know, clamoring, like, give me your money, because they trust her and they should. So from a business standpoint, that was really helpful to see, like, because I've been kind of a doormat in my life, you know, oh, whatever you need, I'll do it. Okay, sure. And so to see her be so strong and still liked as a woman was really important for me, especially because when, you know, when I first started working with her, I was mid-20s, early 20s, I guess. And that's an important time to like figure out who the heck you are and how you want to show up in the world. In terms of like a copywriting lesson, everything I know about naming, I learned from Ash. She's the best namer I've ever met. She understands how words feel together, like how they taste, like how they, you know, she gets it.
Are there exercises? Because I don't think I don't consider myself a good namer. And it's something that I have struggled with. I haven't really focused on it either. But are there any tricks or just ways we can improve if we're not necessarily a great namer, but we need to incorporate that into some of our projects?
Whenever I'm stuck with naming, I get real intimate with the thesaurus, which I know is nothing revolutionary, but like, I won't even necessarily look for specific words. Sometimes I'll Google like two syllable words that start with F and then spend, you know, 13 minutes reading through this expansive Scrabble dictionary list. Because again, you're like looking for those words that pop out at you that make you feel a certain way. You know, the brown eggs amidst the white egg anonymity. You learn to recognize them really quickly, but you've got to consume a whole bunch of words first.
Yeah.
So, you know, going from Ash to doing what you're doing now, tell us a little bit more about sort of the end of the journey.
I was planning on staying with Ash till the day I died, for sure. As she was growing and scaling, she moved a little bit away from the one-on-one copywriting work, which at the time was like the absolute love of my life. So that was kind of the main catalyst for switching, is just that, you know, where she was headed wasn't necessarily 100% where I wanted to go. And so I, you know, took that step out my front door and went balls deep.
What are some of the steps when you launched your own agency? Some of the critical steps that you took first? I'm just asking, thinking of the copywriters, many copywriters in our club who are launching, you know, and they're like, where do I start? How do I find clients? You know, sometimes they're focused on the wrong thing. So from your experience, what were the right things that you focused on?
I did things quickly and kind of haphazardly because I was scared that if I didn't get it out into the world as soon as possible, I would turn into a chicken shit and just like not do it. So like my first site, I built my own site by myself, like in a 24-hour period, marathoned. You know, my butt was numb from sitting in the chair for so long. And the last things I did, which I hugely regret, is nailing down my packages. I was so concerned with looking like I knew what I was doing that I hadn't actually figured out what I was doing. So I would say, like start with what you know you want to do, even if you have one package or your one signature service, and then build your site and your brand and everything around that. So you can launch with like this complete thriving hub that actually serves a purpose, as opposed to being like, look at my great site, you guys, it's so pretty.
So I'm thinking through the structure of your business now, because you mentioned that you like customized packages and you also mentioned retainers. So what does it look like today? Do you have primarily retainer clients and the occasional project? Can you just share kind of the structure and like how you're getting paid today?
Since the first of the year, my like all of my rent and bills and stuff have been paid by one retainer client who takes up 40 hours a month. And then I take on extra projects on top of that, depending on like right now I'm getting married in a month and a half. And so we're hoarding money like a bunch of effing goblins right now. So I'm taking on all the work.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, I can, and it's time to do that. But, you know, in like 2 months, I will likely focus more on that retainer client. I'm probably bringing on another one this month. So the balance is shifting. For the first like 2 years of my business, it was completely one-on-one services, or one-off services rather. And I had one retainer client who was $300 a month, and I thought I was the hottest shit when I got her. And I was, because she was my first one. But now, obviously, you know, that's grown and changed a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, it's in flux right now. I will say I'm making 4 times the amount of money that I was before I started my own business, which is cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. How do you go from the one-on-one clients to the retainer clients? I think this is a nut that a lot of writers try to crack because they like the idea of having monthly income that comes in regularly, pays the baseline, and then they can add on top of that. Is there something that you have done as you've worked with clients, you know, maybe one-on-one to turn them into retainer clients, or do you start with the retainer? You know, what's your process for that?
Some people come to me knowing they want a retainer, and those are obviously an easier sell. This client and the other retainer clients I've had have come to be because I've just consistently over-delivered. And I don't mean in the sense of responding to emails within 3 seconds, 24/7. Like, that's not what I mean. I mean, you know, taking the time to really get to know them and what they want and what their business goals are and how I can get them there. And I don't know if everyone does this or not, but I deliver everything in a Google Doc. And when I do that, it's filled with comments in the sidebar of me telling them exactly why I did certain things in the copy. And this not only cuts down on edits, but it also makes them feel like I am giving them the most royal, attentive treatment ever. And they want to keep that momentum going in their business. Like, if I can make them excited about their business, and hiring me every month means they're always excited about their business, then that becomes a no-brainer for them.
Okay, yeah, I don't think everyone does do that, and I have not. So I just want to hear a little bit more about the comments that you add in the docs. Or are you just kind of explaining like, hey, I pulled this big idea from your Facebook community, or like I pulled this from an Amazon review, and you're just telling them where you pulled the ideas? Or, well, yeah, how do you do that, and like what are you sharing in those comments?
So I usually touch on, yeah, like where I got stuff, especially for like big headlines and call outs. I'll highlight specific words and be like, here's why I chose a specific word. Like, here are the connotations of this word. Here's how, when it's paired with this word next to it, they interact and the feeling it creates for your reader. I really get off on reading about the psychology of selling. And so there are like a few tricks, a few things that happen in copy where you can like pull them out and be like, this increased trust in your readers. And then you like link them to that New York Times article about ellipses or whatever. And they feel like they're learning alongside you without the stress of actually having to do it themselves.
Wow. Okay. So you're linking art. I mean, you're going as far as linking articles and really teaching them as you're sharing your work with them.
Yeah. It's like, I'm going to give you a really stupid example. I co-work at this coffee shop 2 days a week, and it's super trendy and modern and hipstery and intimidating. Last time I got a lavender brown sugar latte, and I was like, oh my God, what's happening?
Perfect for Instagram.
Oh yeah. No, I insta'd the hell out of that bad boy. One of the baristas there always wears these giant, like, cowboyish hats, but they're like made out of felt sort of, and they have like this big band on it and all these feathers, and I thought he was a total d-bag for like a year. And it wasn't until literally yesterday, it was slow, and I was talking to him about his hat as he was making my latte, and he had grown up in a farm in South Africa, and that hat had been given to him by someone on the farm like the night before he'd moved to the States when he was 15. Aww. So now he wears it as like this, whatever. And I immediately went from being like, oh, this guy is a total effing tool, to being like, oh my God, I just want to like sit down cross-legged with you on a couch and talk about, you know, Zach Morris from Saved by the Bell. That's what justifying your copy does for your clients. They can read through it without the comments and be like, yeah, this is fine, whatever. And then you read through it with the comments and they're like, oh my gosh. Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. How did I miss this? Of course.
No, I love that. And I'm going to snag that and start doing it as well. I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, of course it's extra time and effort on your end. Like you said, you're over delivering. That's not required. People don't expect that, but I can see the power in that. And also it shifts their perspective and they view you as really truly the expert, not just like some word artist.
Exactly.
So, Jess, I want to just ask another question about retainers before we shift gears a bit. But I haven't worked with retainers, so it's not my area of expertise, but I'm kind of afraid of them. And there may be people who are considering, you know, jumping into a retainer. So do you have any advice about just how to manage them properly so that it works for you and you're not smothered? Because when I picture retainers or think about them, I kind of feel like I'm someone's, you know, I'm like their employee and they can email me at any hour and I have to produce whatever. You know, I just, it freaks me out a bit.
I totally get that. There are a couple things I'd say. First off would be, it does feel like that. It does feel like you're
okay,
an employee.
So it's all accurate.
Yeah. Except I will say that like when I took on this big retainer client, I had a lot of the same fears that you have. I made a very conscious effort to set super specific expectations for what she can expect from me. So like the team knows that if they email me at 7 o'clock at night, I will not respond until the next day. I told her during our intake, like, I believe that there's no such thing as a copy emergency. So please do not call me at 1:30 in the morning. Like, not a thing. But I also had to like have, I had to shift my mindset to be like, okay, is not having 100% freedom and instead having 88% freedom, but knowing that my bills are paid every month without fail, is that worth it? And for me, it was. So if I wake up and I feel, you know, mildly resentful about having to do something or whatever, I just remind myself, like, not only do I like the client, do I believe in what she's doing, do I like writing the work, but it's saving me so much friggin' stress.
You know, you were mentioning that resentment and but resentment can take place even regardless of whether it's a retainer or a project-based client. So I think you're right. I mean, the positives can definitely outweigh the negatives. So that was helpful to hear, especially for anyone considering potentially jumping into that retainer relationship. You know, it sounds like you just have to protect yourself from the beginning and be super clear.
Yes. Otherwise, it'll drive you nuts.
So we've sort of been dancing around your process and asking, you know, various questions, I think, that touch on your process, Jess. When you bring on a client or start to engage, what does that look like? And sort of walk us through, I know there are no typical projects, but, you know, sort of average out the project. You know, what does that look like working with you, what you're providing for them at each step?
When I get an inquiry email, I email them back with like a template I have saved in my Google canned responses. That's basically like, hey, so great to hear from you. Before I bore you with too many details, let me lay this out for you. Number one, check out my prices so you don't want to slap me with a fish later. And it's a link to just like on my services page on my site, I have starting prices for things. Mm-hmm. So people get a good idea of like, if they want their whole site done for under $500, I'm probably not the best fit for them. So I say that. I let them know my next available start date, and I let them know that I do not create blog content from scratch. I just like edit pre-existing blog posts. If they are cool with all those three qualifiers, then I send them a link to schedule call. It's an Acuity link because I'm an Acuity junkie for life. They book their slot. It's like a free 30-minute like, hey, let's talk call. Before that call, they fill out a type form that's relatively brief. It's mostly just like, what are you looking for? What's your timeline? What's your budget? The last question is like, how sweet are your dance moves? Obviously important. So after that, we hop on the call and wrap about their project. Within 24 hours, I send them a quote via email. And I don't do anything fancy at all for quotes. It's all just like in a plain text email. I list what they're getting, what the total price is for the project. If they accept, we do 50% deposit, 50% 30 days later. All my start dates are Mondays.
Why is that?
I feel most organized on Mondays, and I like being able to start the week on like a fresh foot with clients, and it rounds it out really nicely. I do 2-week turnarounds on everything I do. So the first week I like write behind the scenes by myself, and then the Friday of that first week, I send them their deliverables. By Monday, they get feedback back to me in the Google Doc via comments. And then I do the edits. Usually it's done by then, but if we need one more small round of edits, then we do that also. But it's all, like, I don't use super fancy software. I make it as simple and clean as I can for me and my clients, because we're all busy as heck.
When you're busy behind the scenes writing, what's actually happening during that week? Are you like, what does your research look like? You mentioned you listen to music, you try to find the right playlist. You know, what's happening behind the scenes?
Every day starts with me getting to inbox zero because I cannot focus unless I'm at inbox zero, which is a curse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so like right I think now, that I would freeze like me for the next 6 months. Like, that's not He's happening. Out.
The podcast is shutting down.
Yeah, so I do that so that I start every day with just like a completely empty, clean slate. My head is clear. I'm set. I sit down. I turn on the playlist for the client that I presumably had made. If not, I'll, you know, put it together. And I have a lot of, like, I have a core group of like 3 playlists that I'll just cycle through for a lot of my clients because they fall into similar categories.
I want your playlist so bad.
Yeah, I can see if I can figure out how to do it. I can just share them on Spotify, right?
Yeah, do. Send us a link. We'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so I do that and get all set up, and I have a cup of peppermint tea in my world's best boss mug that I bought the day I quit my job. And I wish I had some like magical thing where I'm like, and then I close my eyes and the words flow through my fingertips like a waterfall. I mean, I struggle. I curse at the screen. I look up inspirational quotes on Pinterest to remind myself I'm not a failure.
These do come in handy.
You know, Neil Gaiman at some point wrote a post somewhere that's like advice for young writers that I've been reading when I feel down in the dumps about my writing since I was like 19 or something. So I'll revisit that, you know. It's trial and error. Like, I word dump. I try to just like vomit out as much as I can, like the whole site of just riffing. And then I'll go through. Usually I'll like take a break after, walk the dog, eat some food, whatever. Then come back to it. And that's when I start doing like the edits, and I'll reorganize sections and add in big headlines and stuff like that. But the biggest hurdle for me has always been just getting the words on the page and starting that doc. So that's what I do first, is just get it on there.
And what about with just, you know, you mentioned that you are taking on extra projects now, you're saving up for the wedding. So when you're in kind of that crazy zone of lots happening, are you working days and evenings, weekends? Like, how do you structure it so you still have a life? Or do you just kind of forget about the life and just go all in and just bust it out?
I am a self-admitted workaholic. I'm a workaholic. And I'm not endorsing this, P.S., but I think I've only taken like two or three full days off since the first of the year.
Wow. Including weekends?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Because I'm in this position where I'm like, I'm scaling so fast and I'm growing so fast. I don't want to bring someone else on. I'm not interested in having an umbrella of people underneath of me. So I'm just kind of doing what I have to do to see where this wild adventure takes me. Like, I don't, you know, want to be 50 and working 60 hours a week, but you know, being 28 and working 60 hours a week, like that's okay for now. My dog can deal for a couple months. I'm working mornings, nights, weekends. This is all, there is a caveat to that, and that is that I have type 2 bipolar, and so there are some days when I cannot work, when I can't get out of bed, when I'm so anxious I'm throwing up, things like that. And so like my relentless work habits and the trust that I build with my clients means that I have the luxury of guiltlessly taking those self-care days to do what I need to do for myself and my life, and then seamlessly jump back into that work when I'm ready without missing a beat.
I love your process. It's really interesting. If I were a client, what is sort of the thing that I could expect to pay to work with you to get, you know, an average project done?
Depends on the client, which I know is not super helpful, but I mean, a good litmus is that I, for a homepage, I would charge like $7.98. Emails, like one email is $2.98. And those are probably going up because I've recently found that emails take me for friggin' ever, you guys.
Me too. I'm raising my email rates too.
The perceived value of an email. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. I had no idea. It's only been, like, Kira, that series I worked on with you was the first, like, big email series I've ever written. So this is totally new to me.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Which was so good, too. So on point. Yeah, I've realized recently my emails, they're like little mini sales pages. They take a lot of time. But anyway, yeah. Everyone, raise your rates. Raise your email rates.
Raise your email rates. So I would say that like in the big spectrum of copywriting, I'd say I'm pretty like middle of the road in terms of rates. And that is on purpose.
Why is that? What's the purpose?
People are going to be so mad at me. I'm really over this whole like, oh, you're a freelancer. Charge what you want. Charge what you're worth. No. That's not the way business works. Charge what your work is worth to your clients. Charge what your work is worth. Not what your life is worth, not what your freedom is worth. Like, you are providing a service and you are a business owner, so run your bleeping business. And that's my stance on that. So I very like carefully and intentionally raised my prices when clients have come back to me and been like, oh, this sales page you wrote me increased my profits by 800%. Like, well, time to bump up my rates a little bit. So they've been really tiny baby steps. I'd never like wake up and I'm like, oh, I feel like hot shit today. I'm going to double my prices. Like, it's just not for me. So.
Okay. Makes sense. So another thing I want to ask, sort of related to your process, you've managed to bring on several what people would say are big name clients. Is your approach to them any different? Do they just find you? How did that happen?
Word of mouth. The first like like big client I'd ever gotten was AAA. And I did a campaign where I compared New Jersey to Gotham City, and it was so fun. So that was my first big one. And then it kind of dropped off the radar, and I was like, okay, well, you know, that's kind of the end of that. And then I got contacted by Dove, who actually offered me a position, like a full-time copywriter position in Maryland. And it wasn't the right fit for me. So I said no, but they still brought me on to work on a commercial script with them remotely. And so I did that in December. That went well. And so then, you know, they're kind of referring me to other people in that circle to get my toes in there. So it's all been word of mouth and luck, so much luck. And I cannot stress that enough.
Why do you say luck?
It's very much like being in the right place at the right time. Like if I had been having an off day and my email to AAA like hadn't been engaging enough, I never would have gotten that client, and then it wouldn't have created that domino effect across everyone else. Actually, now that I think about it, AAA found me because of Acuity.
So maybe it's not luck, but it's because you're super talented and you wrote a really killer first email.
It's because no, actually, it couldn't be that. I'm a mob boss, and so everyone's real scared of me.
Okay, Jess, I wanted to ask you, because I like asking this question. You've seen other copywriters, like you're in the space. Where do you think other copywriters, whether they're new or maybe they're experienced, are kind of missing opportunities or could be better, but they're not doing this, or, you know, just based off your experience and what's working for you?
Oh, yeah. People are going to be mad about this one, too. Ellipses.
Don't say it.
Oh my God, ellipses, you guys.
No!
To be fair, it's only, I've seen so many like teaser, like little pre-headline things that are like, want to know the number one secret, ... to blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, do I want to know the number one secret to what? Like I read it like, do you want to know the number one secret to... And so I just hate it. I hate it. It's a pet peeve.
Don't subscribe to the Copywriter Club email then, because I stuff it full of ellipses. And I'm going to put in extras this week.
Oh, man, I hope so. They're like extra sprinkles. Perfect. And also I would say, like, I think, and Kira, you probably have noticed too, like copywriting with personality has started gaining some momentum and people are feeling more comfortable not only expressing themselves in their writing, but companies are feeling more comfortable injecting that humor in. You know, Leanna does obviously some amazing stuff with that too. But I'm excited for these like really, really big companies to use humor. Like if Dove had let me write in my natural like humor-laced voice, I think that will be really powerful. And that's a major hole in the market and something we'll see filled probably in the next like, I would say like 6 to 8 years.
Interesting. So they just haven't caught on yet, or the leadership has not caught on yet.
Yeah. I was naming an event for a big brand the other day, and I wanted to use AF because they want to appeal to like the millennial, like flower crown wearing carnival crowd. And they're like, no, too trendy. I was like, no, but you want to be trendy. So it'll happen.
All right. Well, I've got one last question for you, you know, because I just want to know where you're going and what you're scaling to, because I think you mentioned that, you know, I'm scaling and putting in the work now so you don't have to work you don't have to work crazy hours when you're 60. What are you building right now, if you don't mind sharing that with us?
Marion Shambari and I are working on a set of templates that can be reused over and over and over again for business owners and copywriters for things like sales pages. And I'm trying to figure out how to move away from one-on-one client work without, like, you know, without being, like, a Facebook coach, mostly. Because I'm just not interested in doing that right now. So, I don't know. The future is a wide, wild, open space. And I am so excited to tiptoe through the tulips.
It's been a great interview, Jess. If people want to connect with you online, find out more about you, read the crazy things that you've written and some of the uncrazy things, where would they look for you?
My company website is verveandvigor.com. It's V-I-G-O-U-R. That has like portfolio, site info, blah, blah, blah. Of course, friend me on Facebook. I'm super friendly. That's all. That's all I got for you.
Thank you, Jess. Really appreciate your time. This has been really fun.
Yeah, it's been great.
This is great.
Before we end the podcast, we just want to tell you about our sponsor, AirStory. AirStory is an application designed to help you write faster. And it does a few things really well. It makes collaborating with others on your team easier. So if you work with clients or other team members on projects, you'll love the way that you can interact within your project documents. But there are two things that we really like about AirStory that you won't get with Word or Google Docs. The first is the way that it lets you organize information into cards. If you refer to research or other information when writing blog posts or websites or sales pages, you'll love the way that you can organize bits of information or entire articles into a card file that you can then drag and drop into your document. And if you do your research online, AirStory's Chrome extension lets you cut and save information directly into AirStory. It's pretty cool. Plus, AirStory has a library of templates that you can use on different projects. So let's say that you've been hired to write a sales page or an email sequence and you don't have any experience or you want additional inspiration for the project. You can go into the template library, find a template for what you're working on, and use it to start your document. Maybe best of all, you can try it now for free. In fact, one project at AirStory is always free. If you're a professional writer, there's so much here that can help you. Check it out at airstory.co/club. You've been listening to the Copywriter Club podcast with Kira Hug and Rob Marsh. Music for the show is a clip from Gravity by Whitest Boy Alive, available in iTunes. If you like what you've heard, you can help us spread the word by subscribing in iTunes and by leaving a review. For show notes, a full transcript, and links to our free Facebook community, visit thecopywriterclub.com. We'll see you next episode.